Welcome to A Fine Time for Healing. Thank you for listening and watching today's episode. I have a really interesting guest for you today. I think you're really going to like this show. Her name is Erica Hornthal, and Erica offers movement-based psychotherapy for individuals and groups, as well as somatic consultation for wellness enthusiasts, professionals, and coaches in her Chicago Dance Therapy studio. She is a board-certified dance movement therapist, licensed clinical professional counselor, author of Body Aware. She's also the author of what we're going to talk about today, her movement therapy deck. And she's the founder of Chicago Dance Therapy, and she assists clients in moving their bodies to move their minds. I know your ears are all perked up. You're excited to hear this. Welcome, Erica. It's great to have you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
This whole thing was sparked by a tragedy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I tried to remember this. It didn't stand out in my mind, but we're talking about a mass shooting on July 4th in the Chicago area. And I remember the July 4th one in Boston, but tell us about this one. What happened?
Yeah, so I live in Deerfield, Illinois, which is a northern suburb of Chicago. And about 3-ish miles away is the small town, small village, I believe they go by, of Highland Park. And I guess it's not that small, but quite a few famous people are actually from Highland Park. But I think most people have more of a feel for what we call the North Shore based off of the, I guess, 20-year-old now movie Mean Girls. But that is definitely not the, while that can be stereotyped, that is definitely not the feel of this town. And it was, yeah, July 4th, just probably like any other July 4th. And what basically ended up happening was during the July 4th parade, a community member ended up just opening target on just basically random bystanders. I don't think it was ever proven that they were specifically going after anyone in particular, just that the individual was just trying to cause harm to, I'm assuming, as many people as possible. And it just really left the community in shock, to say the least, as I think all communities would be. You know, I think many of us can go through life thinking this will never happen here, or, you know, not in my community. You know, it can happen anywhere. This we know, unfortunately, and it's just continuing to happen more and more. And so my family and I, being a few miles away, were gearing up for our parade. And we were already at, like, they call it family days, this family organized carnival and social event. And for very little reason, we were just evacuated. We didn't really know what was going on. It wasn't pandemonium, like I think people were experiencing just a few miles away. But we were just told to go home and stay in your homes until further notice. And of course, because of social media, you know, people are hearing already what's going on. I remember someone coming up to me before we were even told to evacuate. She said, "Just so you know, someone just told me that there's an active shooting situation down the street." And I was like, "Really? Okay." I didn't really think twice of it. And then, you know, within a minute or two, clearly people were catching on. So what I noticed, being a therapist, counselor in my area, not just a dance therapist, but, you know, counselor, talk therapist as well, you know, people rally, right? So a lot of therapists, it's even their trauma response to jump in and be the helpers.
Right.
But obviously we wanted to create an atmosphere of support. And so crisis counseling efforts quickly got underway. And, you know, I thought, am I in the position to do this? Am I stable and grounded enough to be offering crisis counseling to other people? And I came to the conclusion that I was scared, but I wasn't triggered. I wasn't traumatized in a way that I couldn't reach out to people or help people stabilize. So we go to the high school and they have this big organized crisis counseling situation. I think that's where also the FBI was eventually stationed as well. It's pretty overwhelming. And as people were coming in and were trying to offer support, it was just so evident to me how much bodies were impacted by this tragedy, and that talking about it wasn't accessible in that moment. You know, that we can try to talk, but to recount the events or to even comprehend what had just happened, it was just impossible for many people. And it was really in that moment where I saw people passing out resources. We had these boxes of crayons and markers and coloring books for kids and adults. The Squishmallow Company Corporation donated thousands of squishmallows. And, you know, we just wanted people to feel comfortable and safe in a sense. And I just so badly wanted a resource that I could hand to people and say, you don't have to understand. You don't have to even know why you're doing this. But I promise you that connecting safely to your body is going to allow you to start talking about what you've experienced. But that didn't exist. And I couldn't reach everybody. You know, I counseled one or two people during the day. So I went to my publisher and I said, this is an idea that I have. What do you think about it? Somatics is going crazy on the internet and online in general. Can we put together a mainstream resource, you know, that people can access? They can Google search, they can hop on Amazon, go to their local bookstore, and start to reconnect to their bodies and create safety from within. And so it's a long story, but that is exactly where it came from. And it always takes a little longer to make these things come to fruition, but about a year later, we had the resource. And so, you know, now I'm actively trying to get that information and the resource itself to the community and, you know, to people really, really at this point around the world.
Right. So, 7 people were killed in this shooting, and 48 others were physically wounded. But that doesn't mean that the onlookers, the people that saw this happen, were not completely traumatized by it, because PTSD can happen from witnessing something like this.
Yeah, there
So,
was just so much vicarious trauma, you know, so much secondary trauma. Just
yeah.
hearing about it on the news was triggering people.
It is. It's very, very scary. So, tell us about what dance therapy is.
Sure. Dance therapy is a creative arts therapy. So most people hear about art and music therapy, but there's also dance therapy, there's drama therapy. There's poetry therapy, there's bibliotherapy. So there's this overarching umbrella called creative arts therapies. And under that umbrella is dance movement therapy. It's the psychotherapeutic use of movement. So that could be body awareness, nonverbal communication, proprioception. It's the nonverbal focus, right? It's the psychotherapy that uses movement to support not only the therapeutic relationship, but to help people integrate mind, body and spirit or soul. So it really focuses and centrals on the relationship that we have with movement, which is really the basis for all of our experiences.
Interesting. So somatic means the body. And when we are traumatized, it's not just a mental, emotional, psychological thing, it's a body reaction. Is that set off by the nervous system?
Yeah, so we're sensing things all the time, most that we're not even aware of, you know. And I find it interesting that, especially when it comes to mental health and psychology, psychotherapy, where we are today is very mind-centered. You know, we want to go into the mind, we want to talk about what we're experiencing, and that's such a small percentage of our experience, and it's not the origin of where these things are occurring. So whether it's, you know, nervous system specifically or just the body, you know, the body brain connection, everything is embodied. Everything comes from what we sense from when we're born to, yeah, when we go through these, you know, tragic or horrific events. So I think it's really vital that not just for trauma, but that we understand like all aspects of healing have to include the body.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I know I've done tremendous healing emotionally, mentally, psychologically, but my body is holding on. And that's exactly where it's stuck. And that's one of the reasons why I found this so interesting. So tell us, what kind of movements, what kind of things would we be doing if we were looking at this deck or reading your books or whatever? And how do they correspond to how we're feeling?
Yeah, well, to start with the second half of that, so how we feel has everything to do with the way that we move. And it starts from a very, very young age. You know, most of it's pre-verbal. So a lot of the things that we experience, such as lack of boundaries, inability to stand up for ourselves, feeling invisible or like we're not enough, not having enough self-esteem, confidence, etc. These things are actually hardwired into us pretty early on, just based off of the nonverbal relationships that we have, what we've been given, but also what we haven't been given. And going into the mind to repattern them, while it's not impossible, is actually a lot harder. And so people will start to notice that they're spinning their wheels or they reach a plateau. And so I always say it's not necessarily the movement itself. It's also the execution of the movement. So I'm hesitant, maybe sometimes even resistant, to actually offer movements specifically. And what I've begun to do is really focus more on defining what movement even is.
Okay.
So for most of us, when we hear the word movement, I think we're very conditioned to think exercise. And while that's one form of movement, other movements that happen, you know, that take place just in all of us all the time that we don't even notice, right? Breathing, blinking, blood flowing, cells dividing, respiration, digestion. This is all movement. And that's not always movement that we can control, so to speak, but it's movement that we can become more aware of. So a couple things, I invite people to always be more aware of how they're moving, especially when it comes to points of overwhelm or agitation, activation, trauma. Not just the movement we are doing, but also the absence of movement. And then the other thing that we can do is become curious and start to kind of move beyond those, right? Challenge the way that we show up in those particular situations. You know, movement at the heart of it is a change in position, a shift in posture, even perspective. So giving ourselves permission to move through really challenging situations can really be the difference, you know, between moving through something, processing something, or holding on to it, you know, and really bracing. And I think one of the beauties of it too is that because it's really that pre-verbal place, we don't have to think our way in. We just have to feel our way in. And that's really hard for people. It's really hard for us because we're looking for reason and logic and the why and the evidence. And the evidence is there. It's just so, so much easier to feel it than it is to sometimes speak of it.
You're right. You're very right. I know. I mean, I do this, and I'm sure a lot of people do this. When I'm stressed, I hold my breath. You know, and I'm like, oh, I'm not breathing. Start breathing.
Yeah.
You feel better.
Yeah. Or sometimes we experience the breathlessness in relationship to someone else. You know, if you're with someone and they're talking really fast and they're not breathing, and then all of a sudden we're like, why am I out of breath? You know,
right.
Those mirror neurons, the energy that we're sharing, it's so easy for that to become our reality too. So yeah, breath is a big one. We hold it a lot.
Yeah. And there's a lot of breathing techniques that mm-hmm. can be done. And another thing that, and I don't know if this is related to what you do, but I know that shaking can be part of releasing trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Do you work with that at all?
Yeah, so shaking is a very natural form of release, right? Tension, nervous system reset, whatever you want to call it. You know, we tend to see it in animals, which I think we forget that we too are animals, but, you know, of a different species. But Again, we so rely on that cognitive piece that, oh, we're so intellectual, right? We're so reasonable, we're so cognitive that we override a lot of these primitive instincts. Shaking, while it's not, again, always something that I will intentionally ask someone to do, what I tend to notice that is that they're already doing it. So whether you're shaking because you are cold, you're overwhelmed, your body is stressed and anxious, or agitated to say the least, or because you're visibly wiggling, moving, feeling really energized and just can't sit still. We do it more than we realize, but I think what somatic experiencing and Levine is really encouraging people is to look at, how our animal brothers and sisters do it, right? When the body is overcome with that fight, that flight, that freeze, that fawn or fainting impulse, that sometimes we forget we can watch them do it, right? They shake through it. It is, yeah, it's almost, I don't, it's not an entire reset. That's not always the right word. But it is really allowing the nervous system to dispel a lot of charge. So I remind people of that, especially if we're in that fight mode, it can be really helpful, or a freeze to wiggle, so a shake might be too intense for some people. We have to really look at the intensity of our movement too. But to wiggle is a less intense form of shaking. And it really does allow the emotions to move through us. It allows us to dispel and discharge a lot of that energy and that tension that we don't always know what to do with.
Exactly. And a lot of us hold tension in our necks and our backs and our muscles. I know I do. I don't even feel it because it's has been there for so long. But when a chiropractor or a massage therapist touches me, they're like, "Wow, you're locked up." I've said, "I am." I don't even know it because that's like the norm for my muscles.
Yeah, it becomes our baseline.
Yeah, it does. I mean, that is my baseline. I don't feel it. If there's more going on, if a nerve is being pressed, I will feel that. But the basic day-to-day, I've just come to be accustomed to it. But why do we tense our muscles?
Probably for a lot of reasons. I mean, I know I tense my muscles, or when I notice my muscles are tense, for me, it's when I feel pressure. So it's like the external pressure, or the internal, the expectation, the judgment. When we feel fear, anxiety, when we experience what might be discomfort or pain, the body constricts, for biological reasons, right? We want to either take up less space, be smaller. If there's a predator and we're not able to run away, we want to shrink. We want to be as invisible as possible. And so that tendency, right, is to just freeze, is to lock up, is to, in many ways, tense up our bodies. And then if we don't dispel it, it stays there. It doesn't go anywhere. It might lessen as we kind of distract ourselves from it, or as we naturally start moving throughout our day. But for so many of us, it really gets stuck. So, not just our muscle, but our fascia, our connective tissue. I'm realizing, so if the body keeps the score, it's really the fascia that's kind of the referee.
Really?
And so if we're not getting into those deeper areas, you mentioned jaw. There's connective tissue that actually connects the jaw to the hips. So a lot of times we won't even notice that. If we have a really tight jaw, we have really tight hips as well. And hips are really the center of our emotions. So if we're not able to move that part of the body, in essence, we're sitting on our emotions a lot of the time as well. So it's really looking at how fluid we can be with our emotions and our emotions. That at any point, if an area is tense or locked up, it's almost like construction site. And then we need to find a detour. But if we don't know that we need the detour, then we just kind of stay in one place until the construction site's done.
Makes sense. Do children naturally move unless they're told they can't?
Yes, I think we all naturally move until we're told we can't. And so some of us have had longer experiences with that well into adulthood, where we're much freer to move, or we don't have, the consequences of movement. But, starting at a very young age, it is very much like, oh, look, you can sit up. Great. Now that you're sitting, okay, we're going to work on, standing. And once you can stand, then we're going to work on walking. And if we're not moving in the way that someone deems appropriate, then we're quickly told how to be, sit down, be quiet, stop talking, don't move, wait your turn. And so it's about balance. We don't want to just be moving all over the place chaotically, frantically, whenever, the mood strikes us. And in a way that could harm or, interfere with the people or places around us. But we shouldn't also just go to the extreme of immobility, and forcing a freeze, right? Forcing that tension onto a body. So, we're born non-verbally communicating. That is our main, our, that is our mode of communication. I mean, we cry, we'll scream, we'll vocalize, but that's also movement. It's vibration of the vocal cords.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so we are born as movers. Oddly enough, I was taking some notes and just kind of writing this morning, and I wrote, we're not born thinkers, we are born movers, we're born feelers. And pretty much when we're capable of talking about an experience or saying what's on our mind, the body, the movement piece is really diminished, and kind of shut down.
Right.
And so whether it's whatever those experiences are, a lot of it does come down to schooling, and I'm a big supporter of traditional schooling. My kids are in public school, but we sacrifice the body and movement and creativity and imagination and flow for what we deem to be the most important, which is that cognitive, very intellectual mindset.
Right. I mean, school is, for all intents and purposes, geared for a particular type of child, okay?
Sure.
A mainstream child. And not all children are the same, not all children learn the same, and some do need to move. And they're shunned and they're told they're wrong, and that's,
Yeah.
so
We learn through movement. So it's funny to me that as we're trying to encourage learning, we are diminishing and kind of shutting down movement. Whereas if we incorporated movement, studies show that we learn better.
wow,
Yeah.
that's so interesting. So I don't even know where this would fit in here, but I sort of was, talking about that. But children who have ADHD, is there a reason for their their need to move that you know of?
I mean, so I'm by no means an ADHD or ADD expert. But the piece that I can offer, right, is that movement. So, what's happening in a body, right? And where's the movement coming from, or where's the unmet need, right? So I think with a lot of children, well, even people, I work with a lot of adults now that are surprisingly to themselves, even like, I was just diagnosed with, or I was just assessed for, like, I didn't know I had this. So outside of the biological kind of even like genetic markers, when I see individuals with ADHD or ADD, so much of it is I guess at the heart of it, a lack of connection and sense of agency over their movement. So sometimes there's the extreme of I feel awkward in my body, or like my body's not my own. It's hard to sit, it's hard to focus, it feels a little chaotic or disjointed. Quite the opposite, we can almost be like hypervigilant of our body because so many people have told us what we should be doing with it, and so we can really control it, and that kind of muddies who we are too, right? So we're not really being in our authentic mind, but also movement space. So for me, I think the movement piece is so powerful because it's not about controlling our movement, it's actually about expressing the movement. So if we're feeling the need to get up and jump or bounce, walk around, we get to be in control of how we modulate our energy. And not that it's shameful, not that there's something wrong, that I can't sit still or I don't have an attention span. It's quite literally addressing where we are and then almost making it work for ourselves. So many people with ADHD are actually, it's almost like a, I know this isn't everybody's situation, but it's almost like a superpower for some people where they feel like I'm so motivated. I get so much done. That can often lead to burnout or kind of this, you know, too much too soon, which is also trauma. But, you know, I don't think it's a bad or it's good or bad. You know, it's learning what are my movement habits? What's my, what we call movement profile? And what can I do to support it, right? What can I do to make those changes that I really want to see? In addition to sometimes we need medication, sometimes we need other interventions. So, you know, ADHD for a lot of people is another form of dysregulation, right? Another form of disconnect to our body and to our felt experience. So if we can bring more awareness and more focus, we can learn to quiet the body. I don't mean to be still, but like to quiet the body, which ultimately quiets the mind.
Interesting. So let's talk about your movement therapy deck. How is this? Tell us about this and how. Oh, you're going to show us. Good, good, good.
Yeah, I was like, I usually have it on my desk, but I'll. It's good. I know it might be backwards.
The
but
movement
I'll
therapy
it.
Deck.
So, yeah, it looks
okay.
Like this.
Okay. All right. Great. And how many cards are in there?
So we didn't do this intentionally, but it is a normal card deck. So there are 52 cards.
Wow. Interesting.
sometimes more, sometimes less, but people are like, oh, did you do that on purpose? Like, no, it just seemed like a good number. So 52.
Are all cards for everybody? So would somebody use the entire deck or are there specific cards for what people need?
Yeah, they are. Ideally, they are for everybody. So, I say ideally because the idea is that any card at any given time can be adapted as well. So there are some cards that invite you to lay on the floor. I realize that not everybody wants to and or has the potential to do that. Some might ask you to lift your legs or, you know, stand up, you know, at any given moment. It isn't that you have to follow the card directly. It's the intention behind it. Age-wise, it's really for anyone. And the idea too is that you have the agency to choose what card you need. So you can make that choice of this feels good for me, this doesn't feel good for me. And that's also part of listening to our body. So they're really suggestions, you know, a starting off point. And what I've noticed for a lot of people is just simply picking one card leads to more movement. So giving ourselves permission to initiate movement. And then it's almost like, okay, I'm good. I just needed that one card and now I'm moving, you know, or moving in a way that's supporting me.
So there's no particular order to the cards.
There's no order. There's four different categories. We've got sensory, there's breath, there's floor work, and then there's the dance slash movement category. But you can do them in any order, any, you know, you can do all 52. You could do one a week. You can do, you know, just one. There's a little booklet that kind of says like, this is how you might use it. But I think the possibilities are pretty endless.
Okay. So it's not like we have to use it every day, but we sort of, I guess we get to know our bodies and what helps us and then create that.
Yeah. You know, going back to what we were talking about, it's like we learn through experience. And so while I think a lot of us learn through reading and we can have a book and follow the steps or gather, you know, more awareness around ourselves simply by what we're reading, so many people need the experience and the visual. So, so this isn't the one that I usually show, but, you can kind of see, you know, they're just like, really this, they're just bound together, but they're just really bright, you know, bigger words. So hopefully it's more, user friendly for most people, colorful, you know, so it's really up to you to use them how you need them. The whole point was that for some of us who just don't even know where to begin, these are really simple and accessible movement or somatic practices that allow us to begin to reconnect to the body and create that sense of safety, especially when it feels compromised in our local environment or in the world.
So many of us are, spend the day at our desks and we are immobile, you know, and I know every, my chiropractors, my massage therapists, whatever, they all tell me, Randy, you got to get up. You can't sit there all day. So I make it a point to just get up and walk a little bit in between. But what is that doing to us when we're sitting in front of a computer all day or for hours at a time?
Well, that's a whole other podcast, right? But to just touch the tip of the iceberg, you know, we're not meant to be sitting all the time. You know, if you think back to like those primitive kind of caveman times, like, you know, maybe we sat to eat, maybe we sat to get warm, but for the most part, we had to move around to survive. So it's a real leisure. It's a real privilege for a lot of us to actually be able to sit for extended periods of time, but that doesn't mean that it's healthy. It doesn't mean that it's serving us. And so not just for circulation, not just for things like digestion, but for me, the piece that we're missing so often is that we have to move to keep our mental health, to keep our emotional health intact. So I think that's why we're seeing so much more anxiety, so much more depression, so many more symptoms of dis-ease, because yeah, we know we need to be moving for cardiovascular health, but I'll get to the gym later today and that'll be fine. That doesn't necessarily suffice for our emotional well-being. Again, going back to things like that creates more tension. You know, we're only sitting in one way. And so we might notice, oh, my leg fell asleep, so I shift. But if I'm not uncomfortable sitting, you know, I'm not in pain while I'm sitting, I can stay in one position for 6, maybe even 8 hours if I don't take a break. And we're constricting, you know, we're literally cutting off the flow of emotion to the body.
That happens on airplanes too.
I
know for me, I get really, my body just starts to feel really uncomfortable being stuck like that for extended periods of time.
Yes. And I think for the most part we hear, you know, make sure to move or wear the compression socks to avoid blood clots, right? And that scares people because we're like, oh, I don't want a blood clot. So if we're on a long flight, especially, we might make sure that we stand up. If we have to use the bathroom, hopefully we're going to the bathroom, which is like impossible on an airplane, but it's not my favorite thing to do. But other than that, we're like, I'm comfortable. I'm reading my book. I'm listening to my music. I'm watching a movie. Getting my destination, you know, but as far as I know, I'm not hearing the conversation of you need to move for your mental health. You need to move so that, you know, feelings of claustrophobia don't start to set in, you know, so that the anxiety of all the things I have to do when I land or where's my luggage or, you know, who's picking me up at the airport don't start to creep in and really take control of our bodies.
So the movement can prevent our mental, whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah, we think so much that thinking leads to movement. We forget that movement leads to thinking thinking leads to more movement. And so we wonder why we're like, why am I all of a sudden so sad? Or why do I feel lonely? Or like, well, how have you been moving with regard to connection? How are you moving with regard to relationship? You know, what's the relationship or connection like to yourself? Because that becomes an extension of everything else. So, you know, it's interesting. I think it makes sense as we talk about it, but it is not a mainstream conversation that's happening. And, you know, that's, I think, been my mission for a while, not just the advocacy of dance movement therapy, but just why does this matter so much?
Right. So you created this deck, sort of it came out of this crisis or this tragedy or whatever, you know, trauma that your neighboring community experienced.
Yeah.
If you had had this deck, would you have used it?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I'm a little biased because being a dance movement therapist, I use these things a lot, with my own therapist, COVID, I had to remind myself how much I really needed some of these somatic practices. You know, do I, Do I still need reminding? 100%. You know, so just like anybody else, I go into old habits, I go into trauma responses, and I have to truly remind myself to move through them. I love to dance. That's not the only reason that I'm a dance therapist, but dance is really what saved me, because things could be going on in my life, but I had this consistent movement practice that taught me sometimes to override those messages, but for the most part, to keep moving in a healthy, positive way so that my emotions didn't get stuck, you know, or didn't stay in one place for too long. So to answer your question, yes, I would use this. I already was in many ways, and I think that's why I wanted to put and consolidate a lot of practices into one easy, tangible tool for people who might already be doing it, but for most who aren't.
It sounds like this is something we should incorporate into our daily habits. You know, we brush our teeth, we wash our face, we should move, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, those are movements. So that's something that I'll tell people is look at the movement you're already doing and just try to be curious about it, challenge it, and expand it. So yeah, we're brushing our teeth every morning. What are you doing with your body? Sometimes we're brushing our teeth and we're scrolling on our phone. You know, we're brushing our teeth and we're grabbing, clothes, this, kids, that. You know, can we take those opportunities to plant our feet? Can we be mindful of how we are moving our arms? Are we getting every single tooth? You know, are we rushing? Are we slowing down? Looking at the qualities of our movement is a really big aspect of movement too. Pressure, effort, time, space, shape of the movement. So it is a daily practice. That's what I think is so important, that it's not just reserved for that 1 hour at the gym. It's not just adding movement into our day. It's looking at the movement we're already doing and making it work for our mental health.
This makes so much sense. I'm
Yeah,
trained,
people are like, it's not meant to be groundbreaking.
it no,
But
I know.
sometimes
I
it
mean, I've
is,
heard of
'cause we're
dance
like,
therapy.
I never thought of that before.
I've heard of it. I just, but I'm trained in polyvagal theory, and I also am a practitioner of the Safe and Sound Protocol. And part of what we do is we really allow people to get up and move as they're listening, or we encourage, drawing or doodling or coloring or walking around or something like that. It really, really helps. So I have a little bit of familiarity
Sure,
with
yeah.
movement, but and breathing and things like that. Is there a simple breathing exercise that we can all use? I know the box breathing. That's what I usually teach people, the 4-4-4-4.
Sure.
But is there a particular kind of breathing that we could all be doing on a daily basis that would really help us?
So my mind goes to yes, there's a lot. And then I'm thinking like, oh gosh, which is the most important? Okay, but when I reference my body for a moment, and I think the most important thing for people to know about breath is that especially when we are overwhelmed or in those fear responses, we need to increase our exhale. Not only do we need to exhale, because sometimes we forget, we're just in the
Okay.
We need to increase our exhale. So whether you're doing your box breathing, something we call like diaphragmatic breathing, where you're like breathing into your diaphragm, into your belly, which is really helpful. I think the most important thing is that anytime you are breathing, one, we want to make sure that we're focusing just as much on the exhale, but that if we really want to signal that parasympathetic nervous system, we actually have to exhale longer than we inhale. So sometimes people are familiar with the 4-7-8 breathing method. That's the whole premise, that we're breathing in for four, but we're actually exhaling for double that time.
Okay.
So you can choose any number that you need. Eight to me is like, whoa, that's a big number for an
So you would
exhale.
breathe in for four, hold it for seven, let out for eight. Is that what you're saying?
That's the 4-7-8 method. That the numbers are a little overwhelming to a lot of people. So that's why I
Well, you
just
got to
like to
work up.
say,
Sometimes you got to work up to
you have
it.
to work up to it, but just the idea of like we breathe in and then just focusing on that exhale and let the exhale be longer than the inhale. So even if it's in for two, out for three, in for two, out for four. that's a piece that's often missing, you know, that we're still so focused on the inhale that we're not
What is
really
it about? What
letting
is it about
go.
the exhale? I mean, I know it helps to clear out our lungs because there's usually stale air in there. We don't get it all. We don't exhale it all out. Is that, are there other reasons for that?
Well, yeah. So yeah, that's a great point, right? The exhale releases all that carbon dioxide. So we quite literally need to exhale so that we don't have this buildup of toxins in our body. From a physical standpoint, though, especially tapping back into that vagus nerve. So when we exhale deeply into the center of our body, it stimulates the vagus nerve, which is directly connected to that rest and digest reflex. So if we're constantly going, you know, the inhale, we're not tapping the vagus nerve, right? We're actually doing the opposite. We can be encouraging moments of activation. You know, we can use breath to upregulate too, not just to downregulate. But for most of us that are in this activated place, this really, you know, high functioning anxiety place, we really want to remember to drop in. So I'll oftentimes use movement too, right? So if we're breathing in and we reach our arms up as we breathe in, I make sure that I'm pushing down or moving past the point where I started. So, as an example, if my arms start at my waist and I reach them up, then when I exhale, I make sure that they go past my waist, right? Maybe even
Gotcha.
towards my knees or all the
Right.
way down to the floor, whatever
So we
feels
don't
good
have
for
to
you.
actually count. We can,
You
that's
don't
just
have to
sort of a
count. You
reference
can,
point. Okay, I like that. But
You know, and
I'm
that goes
always
to things like
counting and I'm like,
Tai Chi or, you know, Aikido or, you know, these martial arts, these ancient practices, right, that really help us modulate the energy, the movement of the body. So you don't have to count. That's just keeping us in our heads.
I
So
know, I know. I hate it. I really do. I hate counting it.
that's my recommendation. It's not necessarily any one form of breathing, although there's
But I
so
like
many
that.
great
I like
ones.
that. That's
But
visual. We can all understand that. We breathe up
yeah.
and then we breathe
And then
more.
we push
So,
down. Yeah, your
okay.
exhale.
All right. Everybody, breathe. We
Right.
need you to breathe.
I was working with a client recently, and we were identifying her rhythm in terms of activity, like this idea of always jumping to the next thing, or always feeling like we need to put out fires, waiting for the next email to come in. And as we created this visual, everything was up. It was like up, up, up. Up like a like bunny hop, you know, or leapfrog,
Right.
and we recognize she recognized like there's no down, you know, and that ideally I said, you know, if it could look a certain way, what would it look like? And instead of this leaping, she drew like a diagonal down, like a slope, you know, and so we recognized that that didn't have any up, right? That was just one big exhale.
Okay.
So this idea of like we need the up and the down, the up and the down. So this might look like when that email pops in, instead of reading it right away, pause, right? Literally remind yourself to take a breath cycle before opening that email, if you must. Otherwise, you know, close it up, read it later. But we have to remember that for every exhale we take, we need, I mean, sorry, for any inhale that we take, we need to complement it with an exhale.
You know, that's such a simple thing, but
All right.
I never thought about that. You know,
Breathing.
I right, breathing. I never thought about the importance of the exhale. I learned the Alexander method, and she taught me to breathe into my back. You know, and that was really different because she's like, "Show me how you breathe," and I was like, you know, the short breath, and then
Right up.
she showed me how to breathe into my back and really expand my lungs. And that was different. So there's so many different,
There are. There's
there's so
just like
many
a
different ways to
plethora.
breathe. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I have some clients that are almost triggered by breath, you know, which is so interesting because we have to breathe. We can't not breathe. But sometimes focusing so much on the breath creates more anxiety too. So, you know, it really, it's very dependent on the person, you know, and the body that we're working with. But since you mentioned it, for anybody listening who's like, I don't breathe into my back. What do I do? A great way to practice or to try it on your own is to just stand up against a wall. And so you feel the pressure, the feedback of the wall against your back. And as you breathe in, imagine or try your best to send the air into the wall. And you will start to feel this spreading. You'll start to feel like, oh, wow. Because we're not aware of what we call our backspace, unless we're like, hey, can you close this zipper? Can you get this button? Can you scratch this part? We're just so focused on going forward, So reaching into that backspace and utilizing the capacity of our lungs, think about how that translates to the capacity for life, right? When I'm expansive and open, I can receive so much better. I can slow down, I can think clearly. If we're breathing fast and short, it doesn't do justice to our thinking patterns.
So, are we getting a fuller breath from the back?
We get a fuller breath when we use all of the angles, right? So we move in three dimensions. So we have this vertical, which you mentioned, where it's like the
Right, sure.
so
Which
we've got this
most people
vertical.
do,
Right. Take a deep breath. Like,
right?
I didn't know your shoulders breathe. Okay.
Right.
So we've got vertical, we've got horizontal, and then we have what we call the sagittal, which is this forward and back. So it's this three-dimensional sphere, if you will. And so we utilize most of our lungs when we're engaging all of those planes. So it's, I imagine a ball, right, or a sphere, kind of small. And then as I breathe, so as I do it now, it just feels really expansive. I'm not just feeling it in one direction, but it took me a while to get to that place. I mean, I remember in graduate school, that was one of the exercises we would do a lot just to feel those dimensions, to feel ourselves moving in all and every way possible. And so for me, it was like focusing on one, then focusing on the other, then starting to integrate two at a time until you get to the point where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling all three. And again, when we're under stress, that's going to be a lot harder because we want to constrict. It's very hard to expand under stress.
Yeah, I mean, but if I'm not used to doing that deep breathing, I feel a little lightheaded from it.
Yes.
A
Yeah. Even
lot.
me. I mean, like, yes, it kind of floods, we get flooded with oxygen and then we're like, whoa. So, that can happen, depending on age, depending on, health situations. But for those of us who especially don't have a lot of experience with breath work, we're all breathing, but breath work, make sure you're supported. I'd say like start sitting down, feel supported in your chair or, do it with another person, hold on to something, like stabilize yourself. And we can always sit down or even kind of lower our head, right, to just like regain that sense of balance as well.
So being still is one thing, that's meditation. Movement is another thing. We need to do all of these things. We really don't think about that. Most people don't
Yeah.
really think about that. That's why I think this topic is so important to bring, to my listeners, because it's just like a, oh yeah, I'm supposed to move, I'm supposed to breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Think about that, right?
it's crazy.
That's just for kids, Oh, they're so free. But yeah, we've just conditioned ourselves to be very still. And to speak to your point, that sometimes I get a lot of pushback or resistance, right? Where people say, I can't sit still, or it's hard for me to be still. I don't want to meditate, or yoga is really hard for me. The slower yogas are really hard. And so I always like to point out that just the reminder that there's movement and stillness too, and maybe not the movement that we're thinking in terms of like moving our large motor movement, moving my legs, my arms, getting my heart rate up. But we just spent some time talking about breathing, right? And that is the foundation of a lot of our movement. And we're actually encouraged to focus on that in the stillness, in the meditation, using our breath to support the mind. So for listeners to remember that movement isn't everything. Anything we're doing, including engaging in conversation on our phones. It's small movement, but there is movement there. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to, touch the screen or scroll through or, press the button or end the call. There's movement and stillness as well, And so if it feels overwhelming to be still, then allow yourself to focus on the movement that is happening in the stillness. Or for clients where like they're moving a lot and maybe their goal for whatever reason is to feel comfortable with stillness, we can move through that, right? I'll have them move there to their own pace and then pause, right? Or move to their own pace and free, you know, free, a good game of freeze dance is always a game changer for a lot of people. But that correlates to impulse control, right? Motivation, initiation, so many things beyond just the physical aspect of it. So again, always look for movement. Notice that there's movement in everything. And sometimes that helps us actually jumpstart a movement practice.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of dance? Do you do all dance? Are you modern, ballet, everything? Or what do you like?
Yeah. So at this point in my life, it's really hard to find adult dance classes in our community. I think in many areas, but like in the suburbs or like in a community, a small community. So at this point, I am much more connected to, I would say hip hop, but that's not always the right word. I take a cardio funk class. So it's jazz, top 40 music usually. That's my go-to. But growing up, I loved tap. I loved jazz through high school and college. I did mostly modern. I dabbled in just trying on some different movements. Like I remember in college learning, briefly learning ballroom, briefly learning some Irish step dancing. I was talking to somebody the other day about how we learned capoeira. We learned Bharatanatyam, so like traditional Indian folk dancing. So I'm not an expert in any of those, but for me, it's about building a robust movement vocabulary. And I really want to try different movements that feel so not triggering to my body, but so out of my body's comfort zone in many ways. Doesn't mean we have to continue to do them, but to try them out. You know, so many of us stay in movement habits because it feels good and it works. I run every day. That's my thing. You know, I'm like, great, but it benefits you to try things other than just what you've been used to, because we plateau. We know health-wise, it doesn't reach the same goals that maybe it once did. I'm not maintaining my weight anymore. I'm gaining weight. My metabolism's changing. So I really try to push the envelope. I'm always like wanting to try a new movement practice, if even just, you know, once or twice. But movement for me now is a connection to self. And it's just, you know, moving through whatever stress I had. So I like a lot of hip movement. I like a lot of activating my spine, my core fast, but then also marrying it with some slower stretching and flowy kind of lyrical movement. And so that's where I am now. But yeah, it's kind of changed throughout my life. And I tried a little bit of almost everything, but I know that that's not true. There's so
you
many
weren't
ways
like,
of dancing.
You weren't like focused in ballet or anything like that, like strong.
I was never really much of a ballet dancer. I mean, I think growing up, when you're in a studio, that's what we're told is the foundation. So, you know, I went to my fair share of ballet classes,
right,
but
sure.
As I got older and I wasn't going on point or I wasn't, you know, looking to perform in a ballet company, I quickly left that alone.
Yeah. So, you're doing the fun stuff.
I mean, you know,
it's
sometimes
fun.
I look at ballet and I'm like, oh my God, if I had stuck with it, or, you know, if it fit into my body, I think a little bit more, not the way my body looks, but if it just was something that felt more organic to me, I would have stuck with it. But I was always just more connected to also the musical theater side. I always loved jazz dance, and I always loved being on stage. You know, singing, I love to sing. So even that now is actually a movement practice. Cause like I said, you know, it's moving the vocal cords. It's great for breath work. And even starting to play guitar. So that's movement, even though it's a musical instrument. So I'm just always looking for different movement practices, but dance will always be my first love.
So singing in the shower is a good movement for your vocal cords.
It is actually.
Or singing
that's
in
one
the
of the
car
cards.
Or whatever, you know.
That's one of the cards is singing, you know, sing wherever, whenever, you know. So if it doesn't feel good to sing in the middle of the grocery store, then yeah, just sing in your car, sing in your shower. If you want to go out and do karaoke, great. But that's not, you know, that's not the only way to do it.
I had a guest on one time. She lives in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And she would get on the subway and she would just start singing to everybody. She felt totally fine. And everybody,
Oh my gosh.
everybody would look at her, but this was it. You know, it's so hard for me to remember what the whole purpose of this was. But it was just like self-expression, probably. Just if you want to sing on the subway, sing on the subway. And
Sure.
I'm
I
like,
mean, it's loud, so you know, there's also, right? It's also like this, maybe I'm just wondering if in certain places it feels safe because you can do it and no one can hear you. Even though you're doing it loudly, you're like the trains are so loud and the
she would
announcements.
stand
So,
up. No, she's
so
like
funny.
stand up and she would
Well, just
perform,
perform to the car.
whether people wanted to hear it or not. Gotta love people that are that free and easy. So
Yeah.
if we're using these cards, are we going to feel immediate benefits from these movements? So say we're feeling very depressed and we pick a card for movement. Is that going to help us feel better, in the immediate future, or is this something that takes time?
Column A, a little of column B. So any chance to move is a chance to change your mind, you know, to change your mood and to change your mindset. So staying in that place isn't going to make it any better. Moving isn't going to make it worse in many ways. It will give you the opportunity to shift that mindset. So for me to say, try a card and your depression will be gone, that's a really huge statement, right? And we need more support around that. Just doing one movement alone, never doing it again, isn't going to make permanent change. But I've done it myself and I've had people say, you know, wow, just doing this one card for a minute or 30 seconds, I feel different because something shifted, something moved. So, yes, you will feel something pretty immediately. Will those effects last forever? No. That's why it's a practice. We have to keep doing it. And over time, our symptoms, the way we connect to our body, the way we feel overall will change. But it is, you know, I want to say, I have a hard time with like the whole riding a bike thing. You're like, oh, it's like riding a bike, you just get on. But it took so many of us how long to learn to ride that bike, you know, and that if I don't touch it for 20 years, yeah, I can do it. It might take me a few minutes or more, right, to feel
Right.
comfortable on that bike again.
Exactly.
So yes, you will feel something immediately. I will say that if we are not connected to our bodies or listening to our bodies and we start to do a lot of it, you may feel really overwhelmed. And it doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. Quite the opposite. Sometimes it means that you're activating something like, whoa, this is touching a nerve, or I'm feeling a lot of emotion. But that's why we want to go gentle. So, you know, for someone's like, I never listen to my body. It's very hard for me to get connected to that felt sensation. Don't open the deck and do all 52 cards at once. Like, I wouldn't recommend that. You know, you really have to enter into it with gentleness, compassion, you know, like you would. Almost like making a new friend. You know, I know that some of us can be very strong out the gate, but we really want to get to know our body and create this long-lasting friendship with it. And so forcing it, pushing it, activating it before it's ready, not always the best way to begin that long-standing relationship. So let it take the lead, let you know, listen to what it's asking for, listen to what's too much, what's too little, and kind of go from there.
Can movement help us release old trauma?
Oh, 100%. And you know, I'm always happy to continue that narrative. I am, you know, not the person even remotely doing the research in that area, but I'm so thankful that there's been so much research gathered, you know, Bessel van der Kolk, Porges, Levine, Deb Dana, I mean, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, Irmgard Britenneff, like all of these people that have been studying movement and the nervous system and trauma for so long. Yes, I can say with confidence, absolutely. It's not so easy to release it. You know, it's not just, oh, the body keeps the score. Okay, now I'm going to start, you know, dancing in my living room. There are layers, layers and layers of la and layers. And if we are still using the mind to connect to it, we will continue to suppress a lot of it. You know, so you want to connect with or create space or be with someone that can hold space for allowing, the body to regain that sense of safety and security, and to, perhaps sing on that subway, like really feel like you can be supported and held, because when we feel that sense of safety, that's when we can start to release and start to open up.
Yeah, and I've been around many, many decades, but what I find is from childhood emotional trauma, I find that there's a lot in my body. And when you talk about layers, I experience that because every 5 years or so, something else comes up. And no matter how much work I do on myself, there's still going to be more and more and more and more. It just, when it's ready, like you deal with one aspect and then another one comes up. But it's always, for me, it's not mental, it's in the body. It's always in the body. So this makes a lot of sense to me.
Again, it really is the origin of everything, and so, and when I say body, like I include brain, like top of the head, tip of the toes, so all of our organs, especially our brain, that is still part of our body, and not to separate them out, because I think that's the issue. But to me, brain is not mind. Mind is that thoughtful, really, cognition is in brain, but it's still a cognitive place that for many people is sometimes it's in the head. We say head space, but for some people, they identify their mind in their gut, or it's kind of like floating around them. So brain is absolutely like we're getting signals from the brain to the body, to the rest of the body. We're getting signals from the body to the brain, and that we're not necessarily talking about mind when we're talking about brain. So everything starts in the body, Again, we were not born thinkers. We're not born with this logic and reason. I think we'd all remember our birth stories, and that'd be really traumatic for a lot of us. So it's a good thing that we sense, but we remember it in the body.
We
We
all
can
move in
have,
utero. That's like so
right. We
important.
have these pre-verbal experiences that sometimes can be very comforting, and other times can be very jarring. So we might not revisit any, we might not feel these things until we're in our 40s or 50s, just because of the circumstance, just because of a person we've come into contact with or a situation. So same thing with movement. You could be doing this movement actively and things are still going to continue to come up. And that's the beauty of it. It's just another way to help support the healing process.
It's interesting that you said the 40s and 50s because my experience with adult children of narcissistic abuse is that they don't really wake up and fully grasp what they've experienced until they're in their 40s or 50s. So I see that a lot. And people will say to me, oh, I'm so old to be doing this. I'm like, no, you're right there. You're right in that place where, for some reason, you can no longer tolerate what you could tolerate before. It's just there. It's so in your face. So it's interesting. So, Erica, do you have a website?
It's just my name, ericahornthal.com.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
And
Hopefully easy to remember.
show us that deck again, and tell us where we can get that.
So it's called the Movement Therapy Deck.
Okay.
52 mindful movement exercises to regulate your nervous system and process trauma. It's available wherever books are sold. So some people prefer to get their books online on Amazon. But if you want to support your indie bookstores as well, even if they don't have it in store, they can order it for
Can
you.
order it right exactly through the ISBN. Okay, all right, great. So, is there anything that you want to tell us before we close up that we haven't covered a lot?
We really did. I think going back to that, well, maybe I didn't say this, but the piece of, being more aware of our movement or how we're already moving. Something I love to leave listeners with is this question. We're so prone to asking, how are you feeling? I encourage people to take that feeling word out and ask, how are you moving? So how are you moving
How
today?
are
How are
you
you moving
moving?
right now? And just notice what happens for you when you invite that question into your life or, into your conversations. Hey, how are you moving today? You know, it's like, what?
People are like,
What do you
what?
mean, how am I moving today? Right? I'm
What?
not moving. We've lived in this house for 60 years. What are you talking
Right,
about, you know?
it's bringing awareness to people who do not have the awareness. But that's a really cool thing to say to people. I like that.
Right. Yeah. And then it makes you think, you're like, I'm not moving. Am I
I'm just
moving?
sitting here. I'm on the couch. I got my feet up. No, I'm relaxing. I'm not moving. Well, thank you. It was great talking to you. I
You
really
too.
enjoyed this conversation. This is a very important. It's not a product. It's a therapeutic thing. I don't know.
Yeah,
It's not a book.
practice
It's a
tool.
deck. It's a practice. It's a therapeutic practice that we can all do. We can all have it. We can, there's no requirement, and we can do them by ourselves. So everybody should.
You know what? I've known people that have been using them like intergenerationally too. Like a
Really?
grandparent can do it with their kids. Parents can do it with their kids. Adult parents can do it with their, older adult, adult kids can do it with their, adult parents. So
Okay.
it's been really interesting to hear how people are integrating it into their relationships
That's
too.
creative. And the last question I want to ask you is, so do you see clients, patients remotely, or do you see them in office?
Both, really. I personally prefer in person, but thanks to the pandemic, but also just where my current focus and career has taken me. I love connecting with people outside of my immediate area, and usually the way to do that is virtually. So, yeah, even movement therapy, many creative arts therapies can still be done virtually. It looks a little different. But both are possible. It really is about understanding what's best for your healing journey. So I have a lot of clients that are like, I have to be in person. It's not going to cut it to be online. Great. And if they're in my area, we can make that
That is
happen.
perfect. Okay, great. So for anybody that's in the Illinois, let's see, your area,
Chicagoland area.
Chicago, yeah, whatever. Okay. Check Erica out. Let her help you move.
Yeah,
Okay.
thanks.
It's great to talk to you. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks.